12 years. They can go by fast. This guy right here, Ty Olson. Hey, man, come here just a second. You didn't know I was going to do this, did you?
I'm not.
12 years ago, Ty and my son Gage were about 7 years of age. And Gage would spend a night at the Olsons, and Ty would spend a night at our house, and it was nothing but pizza, Skittles, and Mario Kart.
That's good.
And now they're freshman roommates down at the U of A. They room together in Founders Hall, and it's still nothing but pizza, Skittles, and Mario Kart.
It's the same thing.
It is, man. 12 years ago. Imagine that, dude. Golly. What were you doing 12 years ago? February 2007. Think about that for a moment. It was scary at our house 12 years ago in 2007 in February. My wife, Lynn, was in her second month of chemotherapy battling breast cancer, and I was 30 days off from my first heart attack. Who would have thought, you know? Wow, crazy things can happen in 12 years. For some of us, it goes by really fast, doesn't it? I mean, you blink and it's a decade plus two already out the window and gone. And for some of us, will it ever end? 12 years is so stinking long. 12 years. And as we move into our continuing study of miracles here in the book of Mark, we find ourselves today in Mark chapter 5, and we want to take a look at two of the principal characters that are going to have a profound belief encounter with Jesus. And those two principles are, number one, a religious leader by the name of Jairus. And some of us know the story, and if you have your device or your Bible, you might want to go ahead and get prepped on Mark chapter 5, but let's look at this guy. There's 12 years of life going on at Jairus at this intersection he's about to have with Jesus. He's a synagogue leader. It means he's big deal in his part of Jerusalem. He's a key player. He's a significant leader there as a synagogue leader. And he's had 12 years of a life experience that have been marked by these four things. Dignity. He's in a position of respect and influence. Pride, there's a lot of pride that goes when you finally, as a leader, sense that, hey, I've kind of arrived here. I've kind of made it. I've hit the goal, and I'm where I need to be. And there was some resolve. One of the jobs he had as the synagogue leader, he needed to make sure that the worship services were all lined up and all the implementations of the Mosaic law according to Scripture, everything was taking place. So this is a man who's had at least 12 years of doing things right according to Jewish law in anticipation of who the Messiah is going to be. And so he would coordinate those services. It would take place on Saturday mornings. And then there was a lot of joy. It was 12 years of joy because he had a little girl. And she's 12 years of age. And as a parent, watching this little girl grow, and just as who she was in her faith and in her person. So Jairus is in this storyline with 12 years of dignity and pride and resolve and great joy in this little girl. Let's move to the second person in this storyline before we jump into the text. We don't know her name. We know she's a woman who's been shunned by all. Several of the translations tell us and let us know that she has this infirmity. She has this issue of blood. And because of her physical condition, she has been shunned. And she has been labeled unclean. And for 12 years, she's had this condition, and unlike Jairus, who's known a degree of success and pride and joy and resolve, her life experience up to this point is marked by private suffering, public embarrassment, poor medical care, and financial hardship. 12 years. It goes by so fast, or it seems so long. And here we have these two people getting ready to meet in this 12th year, Jesus, the wonder worker. Jesus, the miracle worker. Jesus, who we've been studying in the book of Mark, has been on mission to move people from a posture of fear to a place of faith. Everywhere that Jesus is going in these opening chapters of Mark, we find that he's calling people to pivot. To capitulate from reasons of having legitimate fear in life to moving into a whole new domain and life experience that's built on faith and belief. So there we have it, our three key players in this morning's text. So let's jump in. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed again, now he had healed a demoniac and pigs have been thrown down into a sea. There's a whole lot going on around the Sea of Galilee. And so he's moved from one side back, probably from the eastern side of the lake or the sea, back over to the northwest side. And so he's crossed again by boat to the other side, and a great crowd gathered about him. And he was beside the sea. There's a lot of commotion. There's a lot of street traffic out there and chatter about these miracles that Jesus has been performing by the sea. Isn't it amazing what Jesus does beside the sea sometimes? This is a picture of one of my favorite places on the planet. It's along Highway 38, Northwest Florida. And the number of times I've gone down with issues of fear and faith, of worry and belief, and just sit beside the Gulf of Mexico, build a sandcastle, and let Jesus does what he does so well. And that's what he's doing at Galilee, is what he does down on 38. I think it's what he wants to do in here this morning. If we had a sea, if we had a beach, buckle up. Back into the text. So, they came then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, our friend Jairus, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, stop TV timeout. Wait a minute. This is the synagogue leader. We're talking resolve, dignity, respect, everything that the religious services that he has been lining up going on in his synagogue are setting people up to see and experience and believe and anticipate the Messiah. And here comes Jesus, the one who says, I am him. And the Jews are going, no, you're not. And Jairus, this guy who's had 12 plus years of building on this idea, suddenly sees Jesus for who he is, and he falls at his feet and he implores him. All dignity is gone at that point. He's going to lose some respect on that pivot right there. This is ridiculous that he, the synagogue leader, would fall at the feet of this itinerant preacher and beg for something. My little girl is at the point of death. Come, lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. Jesus went with him, and a great crowd followed in the throng about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. Jairus has laid it all on the line, stepped out of his dignity and respect and resolve, and just holding on to the hope that his joy would not be taken away from him. And Jesus says, come on, let's go. And so Jesus goes with him. And what we see here in Mark is that suddenly this woman is in the crowd with all her private suffering, all her public shame, all her bad medical reports, and all the financial hardship that goes along with mounting medical bills and debt. I mean, I look at her story here, and for 12 years, she had suffered much under many physicians. No negative slant on the doctors in the house, Dr. Luders, but she kept going from one doctor to another doctor to another doctor with this issue of blood, and she just could not find healing. She could just not get well. And she spent all that she had and was no better off, and she only had gotten worse. What a bad place to be in for 12 years. So, she had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him and in the crowd, and she touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up. As we walk through these passages, you might want to underline the number of times that Mark says, immediately. Immediately, the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. I don't know what she'd been feeling in her body for 12 long years, but suddenly she felt well. She felt good. She felt healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" I mean, Jesus, there's this incredible crowd, and it's a throng, actually, and they're just pushing in. And you want to know who touched you? Dozens, if not hundreds, have touched you. And he, looking around to see who had done it, and he looked around, to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him. Okay, that's a very familiar posture before Jesus right now. Jairus, coming from his 12 years, is at Jesus' feet. This woman shunned is now coming out of her 12 years, again, at the same place, at Jesus' feet. And she fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." And while he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, you got to hang with Jairus in this moment. You just put away all your sense of dignity and sense of what is right and sense of your resolve to what you know to be true. You just laid that all aside and laid your request before Jesus' feet that he would heal your daughter, your joy. And here comes this crowd. She's dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler, straight up, he got eye to eye, got in his face, "Look here, come here, look, Jairus. Don't be afraid. Just believe. Don't be afraid," or "do not fear, only believe." What are you scared about this morning? What's the fear? That it might not work out? That healing might not come the way that you would like for healing to come? That you might lose your spouse in all of this? That your family might implode. That your career may tank. What's that? That one, yeah. It came to mind. It was so quick to come to mind right now, wasn't it? I got mine. You got yours. And Jesus has brought us into this auditorium this morning to say a few words to us. Do not fear. Only believe. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John. There's something powerful about those three guys. I mean, you had the 12 disciples, but I'm always intrigued as how Jesus had this triad at play. Of Peter, James, and John. Those were the guys invited into Gethsemane. And when Jesus had personal moments of reflection, it was just he had an inner circle within the 12. And these three guys were part of it. And this triad of Peter, James, and John are just brought in to some of the most remarkable moments in the life and ministry of Jesus. And so they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw this commotion. People were weeping and wailing loudly. These were professional mourners. That was the custom of the day. They would just wail and cry and make a big deal out of the loss or the death that had taken place in the household, and then they were just paid to do it. And when he entered and he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And their entrepreneurship of grief turned to mockery, and they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother, and those who were with him, Peter, James, and John, and they went into where the child was, and taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumai, or kum as it is in some of the translations, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. Uh-oh, there's our word again. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, and they were, what? Immediately. I mean, it's present tense, in the moment, right now, front and center. When Jesus works, you know he's at work. And when he shows up, it's undeniable that it is him. And immediately they were overcome with amazement. And Mark ends this passage by saying that he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Jesus knows something about teenagers. A little pizza, Skittles. Give her something to eat. What are the four big ideas that we can draw out of this passage this morning? Here they go. Number one, fear is a poor leader. No matter what it is that you're facing, that fear, that anxiety, that churning of the stomach acid, those restless nights where you cannot go to sleep, fear is a poor leader. Number two, reaching out requires letting go. On both these situations, these two individuals, Jairus and this woman, had to let go of 12 years of living in a certain way in order to reach out and be able to live in a new way. Jesus makes much of our faith, not our shame or weakness. He did not shame the woman. She was not unclean to him. He didn't demean Jairus for his sense of dignity and pride and resolve. He cut through all the externals and the facades and went straight to the issue, the core issue of their faith and a developing capacity to believe God for his best in their lives. That's what he sees. Fear won't lead us there. Faith does. Faith and belief lead us to grace and power immediately. It's that quick. 12 years. So there's our text this morning, and I began over the last 12 days to think through a good life change story of someone that's been there with Jairus or with this woman, and they get it. They understand this thing of being tempted to be led by fear and at some point put their belief and faith in God's ability to do something rather remarkable. And a couple came right to mind. It was a no-brainer. It was immediately to ask Doug and Heather Walker to join me up here on this platform this morning and have a seat on these stools and tell you a remarkable story of faith, a remarkable story of belief, of Jesus showing up big time in ways that you do not expect him around the story of their daughter Annie. Doug, Heather,
Hey. Thank
you for jumping up here and being willing to do this. So, you know, we got Jairus, we got this woman, and we got the Walkers. And I got into this story of Annie, and I've got Doug and Heather sent some pictures, and there's three different slides here that just captivated me. This first one, I just call Annie the champ, and you see she is headed into surgery, and she's got her thumbs up. And if you know Annie Walker or know anything about the Walker narrative, that's Annie. But even before that, how did Annie's story, how did this all begin for you guys?
Yeah, well, first off, it's great to be back up in Rogers. We go to Fayetteville, so I remember when we first came here, Chip, this was awesome. And Annie, we moved to Mexico. My company moved us to Mexico, and while we were there with our four-year-old and two-year-old daughter, Heather was pregnant, and we got a diagnosis that Annie was going to be born with what's called spina bifida. And so it's a pretty severe birth defect. And so, we had moved down there, and it was quite the experience of getting that diagnosis and the fear that was associated with that. Heather, you want to share anything else there?
I'm trying to think. Is my mic on?
No. Jason, what you think, man?
Do I need to turn it on?
Let's grab it.
I got it. Oh, is this?
We're going to go here.
Okay. Oh, wait, it just came on.
Sweet. Immediately.
Okay, so we hadn't even immediately. So, you know, this was something I hadn't even really thought of until this morning. I remember coming for her baby dedication. And by the way, I've already told Chip.
I know.
Be prepared.
I've got my Kleenex. I'll
for emotion. But I remember coming and having her baby dedication and being very fearful in that moment because we didn't know what the future held for her. I mean, she has a permanent disability, so she's not going to get up and walk away from that, you know? God has been incredibly gracious to us through part of the journey, but I really connected with that fear that you were talking about this morning in the service as I was sitting there remembering being on a stage with lots of healthy babies around me and knowing that our journey was going to be different.
Yes, it was. I remember my on-ramp into the Annie story. Doug and Heather had called some of the elders and pastors together, and one Saturday night at Mosaic, we met in the green room between services and just anointed them with oil and prayed over them. And just you could just see the capitulation from fear into an evolving belief that has just kind of marked Annie's journey up to this point. And that's just one of those moments. You have your moments here at Fellowship, you know, those flash moments where Jesus just kind of does something. Let me stop there, though, and say I remember that prayer and everything that went on in that moment. And then I was down at my first service at Fellowship Fayetteville a couple years ago, and Brian Pope's teaching in the worship service, and or student ministry service. And so I wanted to go in and check out Pope. I think he's one of the finest communicators at Fellowship, by the way. And so I'm sitting there where I'm trying to find a seat, and there's only one seat in the house. There's an empty chair beside Annie. So I just kind of slide in there and sit down beside Annie. She doesn't know me. She doesn't know I was there that night of prayer and all that. And she's so glad that I'm there. She welcomes me, wants to know whose dad I might be, you know? And what's an old guy like you doing in the student service here? And, you know, but there's a second picture here. Annie, the cheerleader, she just exudes with an other-centeredness, if you know her at all. So, man, along that journey, there's been ups and downs and dark days, I'm sure.
There has, Chip. And you know, really, when we got that diagnosis, you know, there in Mexico, we proceeded, and, you know, several people know the story, but we proceeded to decide what to do at that point. And Heather went up to, we decided to go to Vanderbilt. They had a very progressive type of surgery. We actually chose not to do that, but we decided to deliver there. So I'm still in Mexico. We shuffled our other two kids between grandparents in Northwest Arkansas, and Heather's at the hospital there under observation until we delivered there at Vanderbilt. And, you know, it's just, it's such a time of fear. It's a time of grief. While we were living in Mexico, there was a pastor there of a church that we went to, a little Mexican church that really had the spiritual gift of mercy that really ministered to Heather and I. As we processed through that that grief, that sadness, that fear, and the place that we lived, there were mountains all around the city. And I kept on saying, well, Annie can't do this, or she won't do that, or she won't be able to do this, and just this phenomenal sadness. And he would say, hey, Doug, what you're doing is you're trying to take the mountains of the future and you're trying to place them on your shoulders today. He said, what you need to do is practice the presence of today. You need to be thankful for today, and God's going to give you the grace. He's going to give you what his sufficient grace. He's going to give you the strength for today because you're promised today. And he said, those mountains of the future, he said, they might be mountains. They might be molehills. We don't know. And Annie's gone through 14 surgeries or so over her life. I mean, we've been in hospitals a lot. We know a lot of doctors and know a lot about medical field that we never thought we would. And there's a fear element that is there over the years. Yet I would tell you that his provision and his sufficiency and we've been able to foundationally stay on the rock. To the promises of God, his word has meant a lot to us. The prayer time that we had, Chip, with the group here, there's just been so much of the body and his word and our prayer time and the sweetness of our family that as we've gone through this journey with Annie, she has been, I always felt like, okay, having a special needs child at the beginning, I was like, okay, Lord, you know, I mean, please heal Annie. That was our prayer while she was in gestation. And now 17 years later, and to know what our family is like with Annie, the way that she is and what she's done for our family, the blessing that God has provided us is far greater than anything I could ever imagine. I think, Chip, to that God's ways are not our ways. Mm-mm. And for me and our family, and I look at that, what God has done for our family and the blessing that he's provided in his way is so much better than our way.
Yeah. You know that thing Paul asked three times, God, take this thing from me, this thorn in my flesh. And God's response was, not going to do it. You'll know sufficient grace in the perfection of power and weakness in this journey. And this third slide resonated, Heather. And as you were telling me yesterday, some of the story around this incredible image of Annie, the spiritual leader. What's behind this a little bit?
So, this was last year. You know, I felt like God had really made it clear to me that her spiritual journey is going to look different than my other kids or mine, because obviously she was going to have to contend with some things with him about the way she was made and all of that kind of thing. But what we've seen in the last year in particular is this really strong transformation in her. I think she has grown a lot spiritually. This was actually in Puebla, Mexico. We went on a spring break trip with fellowship. And through the course of that trip, I would say she would say that she accepted Jesus, became a believer at 11. But there were just still some things that she hadn't completely given over to the Lord. And I think that last spring break that happened. And so this was actually her walking ahead of me through this tunnel. And I took a picture of it, not realizing what kind of an illustration it would be of her life in that moment, of her just sort of spiritually going from darkness to light and really laying some things bare before the Lord and giving her situation to him.
You know, pivots of fear to belief are all around us in this room this morning, and some of us are right at the pivot, right? You came in here, and you're, let's don't talk about my fear. I'd just soon keep it over here. And Jesus is going, well, let's talk. Let's address this and see the pivot from this fear to believe. Again, the challenge to Jairus is the challenge to us all. Don't fear, only believe. Doug, Heather, what would you say to those of us that are at that pivot right now?
Go ahead, Heather.
You go first.
gosh, there's so much. But what I would say is, you know, as I was sitting back there and I was looking at these things up here, don't be afraid, just believe. When I think about that, it's like, just believe. In the beginning, I did feel like the Lord was saying, don't be afraid of this. This is a gift. You don't understand it right now, but you will see it as a gift, that this is the better plan that I have for your family. And even though you're not going to see the big healing, the sustaining grace, that you're going to know me in a different way because of how you see me on a regular basis. And so I guess for me, the thing, don't fear but believe, for me it was believe that he is enough, that he would sustain us and that he would provide everything that we needed in that place, and he would also provide everything that she needed.
Wow. Last 12 days, Doug and Heather's story obviously popped. It was just like Mark chapter 5, Jairus, this woman, Doug, Heather, Annie. And then Doug and I were in an elder meeting this past Monday evening, and there's another story that popped, and it's around this dear family from China. That right now, this is Lily, the mom, and she has a little unborn child named David, and his big brother Luke is in the yellow. Ning Ning is his dad, and those are his grandparents from China. And I asked Doug just to kind of stand in there to connect the storyline for us this morning.
I look like I'm a part of the family there.
So, okay. You notice there was an immediate response in all these situations, and we have an immediate response we'd like to ask you to do right now in just the next few seconds. If you're there and you're going to capitulate from fear to belief, that's the artwork. That's the arts and crafts, Rogers community thing. We're all made a bunch of fun of it. But what we're going to ask you to do is this, is to come to these containers and don't put your whole hand down in it. Just lightly press where you can make a handprint. Just something like that. And then put it on the canvas. Something like that. And if you want to wipe it off, we've got paper towels and wipes over here. And you can do that, or I recommend leaving a little red paint on your hand this morning as you get ready to leave. But that's our response. That's a call to response. And you're saying, Jackson, I really don't have any fear that I'm jumping off of. Good for you. Thank you for the example. We're following you and your faith and what that means. But and what we'd like to ask you to do is to come up here on behalf of that family from China, because they've asked us to pray for them this morning. And they're in Houston this morning. And little David, it's uncertain, like it was for Annie, like it was for my son Gage. They're just something Jesus only does in the womb that only he can do. And we're asking that. So if you could come, and as an act of faith on behalf of little David, in fact, Beth, let's put that slide back up there one more time. You come and do the same thing, just your hand in the paint and on the canvas for little David. And then when Ning Ning and Lily and the family get back from Houston, we want to present them with a work of art where we pivoted from fear to belief on their behalf, but also fear, belief on your behalf. We're about out of time. We were going to try to take 12 minutes to do this. I don't know if we can do it in 12 minutes, but if you felt led as this video now rolls, just immediately get up and come put your hand in the paint as an expression of your faith. Either for you making the pivot from fear to belief, or you're doing it on behalf of Ning Ning and Lily and David.